Brooklyn these days is a very different place than when Mel Brooks grew up in Williamsburg. Those old world ethnic communities are still there, some of them, but Brooklyn has also become the epicenter for people who want to be cool in New York. Among the transplants who've settled in Brooklyn is a Canadian composer named Darcy James Argue. His new record is called Brooklyn Babylon, and it's one of this year's most anticipated jazz records. Argue leads a band called The Secret Society. They have been called the 21st century big band, and they are that. But what that shorthand means is their music blends the old swingy big band tradition with all kinds of influences. Minimalism, pop, Eastern European music, noise. The result is something new and hard to define and, in my opinion, pretty awesome. Darcy James Argue, welcome to Studio 360.
Thanks so much, Kurt. Happy to be here.
So this record, Brooklyn Babylon, was originally the score to a multimedia performance that had projected images and live action that you created with a graphic novelist. So there's this whole narrative aspect to it. Did you change the music for putting it on a CD for people who are never going to see the show?
I didn't, although I thought long and hard about whether this would work as a record and whether it would work for people who did not get to see the live experience. And then ultimately I sort of figured, well, you know, if Stravinsky and Debussy could get away with it, you know, they have ballet scores that are very tied to the onstage action, but we still listen to Je or Petrushka in concert. And I had enough hubris to figure, well, you know, maybe I can get away with that as well.
I'm glad you used the hubris word to compare yourself to Stravinsky and Debussy. Yeah. But no, and for me, who had not seen it, it works wonderfully as a record. So explain the story that was told on stage in Brooklyn Babylon.
Sure. It's sort of an urban fable. It involves a carpenter, an elderly carpenter named Lev Bezdomny, and an immigrant who is invited by the supreme local authority of Brooklyn, the mayor, to create a carousel that's going to crown the tallest tower in the world, which the mayor, incidentally, is going to have built right in the heart of Brooklyn. So this passage comes actually in the middle of the piece, and this is sort of the soundtrack to the mayor's film presentation of the Tower of Brooklyn. At this moment, we've got this carousel music creeping in, and this is the big reveal when the mayor reveals to Lev that he would like him to construct the carousel that is going to be the crown of this enormous spiral building. And Lev has to grapple with some of the, I guess, unintended consequences of creating this tower and its effect on the neighborhood where he lives.
When the piece premiered in Brooklyn, it was seen by many as being a kind of allegory about this big and controversial real estate development called Atlantic Yards, where there's now a big new sports and concert arena. Is that reading okay by you?
We didn't want to make it quite so specific because the kinds of issues we were grappling with in the story are not limited to one particular project. There's a lot of, you know, Brooklyn has changed enormously in the 10 years that I've been here. And there's a lot of sort of similar developments that have been popping up over that time. And
so it's more mythic about, let's say, gentrification.
Sure. I mean, that's definitely part of it. And that's something that stares you in the face as you walk down your block every day. Pretty much anywhere in Brooklyn, I think you've seen these kind of epic sweeping changes happen, especially in the past 10 years. And this piece was our attempt, you know, as relative newcomers, both to Brooklyn and to America, to grapple with what that means for each of us as residents of the city and residents of our neighborhoods.
There are, as I suggested in the introduction, so many influences in this music. One I'm curious about is the Balkan band sounds like this that I'll play from interlude number 6. that came into the mix via what route? How did you come to that?
Well, you know, we sort of established that our protagonist, Lev Bezdomny, I always sort of imagined him to be coming from the Balkans. And so I wanted the music from that part of the world to play a role in this piece. Also, you know, there's jazz musicians in Brooklyn are kind of fascinated with the music of the Balkan diaspora.
I know. What is that about? What is about the Balkan Eastern European thing in Brooklyn music of the last decade or so?
I think it's a folkloric tradition. It's groove music. It's dance music that is very earthy but also rhythmically very sophisticated. This particular piece that you played is in 13-8. I actually don't know of any Balkan pieces in 13-8. It's not really all that authentic.
It's an interesting question about authenticity because there, in that track, in other parts of it, there are moments when if I were doing a blind listen, I could say, is that music from the 1950s? I mean, for stretches, there's nothing to indicate that this was composed in the 21st century. Is that okay by you? Is that your intention?
Yeah. I mean, I think those questions of voice and authenticity are really secondary for the purposes of this work. You know, I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel exactly. I'm trying to do something that is in my voice that is distinctive but that draws on all of these different traditions.
Let's listen to how some of those traditions fit together on a track like The Neighborhood. And I want you to walk us through some of your various musical influences here.
So the music of the 70s was a particular touchstone for Brooklyn Babylon because I think there's a kind of association between Brooklyn and the 70s in my mind that maybe comes from, you know, movies and television.
So that's why this sounds like Steve Reich a little bit?
So that's definitely part of it, of, you know, that sort of do-it-yourself attitude of minimalist composers in New York in the 1970s. And so that sort of pulsing sound became part of the architecture of this piece. But that sound is now kind of being morphed into something else. And it's, as you can hear, when the bass and drums come in, we've gone from sort of a pure minimalistic sound to more of a almost disco-oriented beat coming in.
Or, yes, I was thinking the Doc Severinsen band on The Tonight Show in the 1970s.
I didn't know that that was a particular
I'm
reference.
I'm not saying a literal influence, but that's right. What I was hearing.
But certainly everyone kind of had to get into that vibe. So I was listening to a lot of 70s jazz that's maybe not super highly regarded these days. The Thad Jones, Mel Lewis big band records from the 70s, the Don Ellis and Donald Byrd records in the 70s that critics and a lot of jazz purists just hated. And for me, those sounds were some of my earliest discoveries when I grew up listening to jazz and thinking about what New York might be like from the vantage point of someone living, you know, growing up, you know, in the suburbs of Vancouver. So I guess mythology of Brooklyn really includes these kinds of sounds and like that warm analog 70s vinyl sound.
Do you think of this music as jazz? Is it important for you to think of yourself as a jazz player?
Well, that's my training. You know, I grew up listening to jazz records, listening to Thad Jones, listening to Clark Terry, listening to Thelonious Monk, and all of my music degrees say jazz on them. And most of the gigs that I've had as a player have been in jazz venues. And then, oddly enough, when I started as a big band leader, the venues that were most receptive to the music that we were playing were not venues with jazz in the name. It was you know, CBGB and the Bowery Poetry Club.
So you're a young jazz pianist. At what point and why do you say, I want to be a big band leader, which is a job, of course, a job description that no longer exists, essentially?
Well, first off, it's just awesome to stand there in front of a group of 18 musicians and being hit with this wall of air just coming at you. It's sort of total sensory overload in a way that few other experiences are. You know, I still get a thrill every time I step up to the you know the podium, and get assaulted in that way by all of those musicians. But there's also some things that you can do as a composer that you can't do with smaller forces, and you know you can sort of pit sections of the band against one another, and it makes sense. It sort of lends itself to a more architectural way of composing, whereas with a small group, you know, the emphasis tends to be more on improvisation, and some of the grand designs that I've worked into my large ensemble music might feel a little bit mannered if you tried to write in the same way for, you know, a quartet.
It seems like it would be hard for musicians to play compared to just a jazz quartet playing whatever a jazz quartet plays.
Yeah, that's an understatement. The music is incredibly difficult, and I don't set out to write music that is going to be a pain in the ass for the players to play, but often it comes out that way, and it's sort of deceptively so. I have a lot of players who might sub in a rehearsal, and afterwards they'll come up to me and say, like, you know, I've listened to your music a lot, but I had no idea it was so hard.
This is kind of a dumb question, but I need to ask it nevertheless. Darcy James Argue is a great name because it's both simple and highly unusual. Do you think it's helped your career to have that as your brand?
I've never thought about that. You know, growing up with a name like Argue, you certainly come in for your fair share of abuse. And one of the interesting things I discovered about the United States, one of the cultural differences between the U.S. and Canada, is that in Canada, Darcy is like a hockey player's name. And
here it's a Jane Austen character.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of tough guys
really?
In hockey. Darcy Hordachuk and back in my day, Darcy Rota, who were hockey players. And here, as a man's name, it's incredibly rare. So I get all of my junk mail addressed to Ms. Darcy Argue.
How interesting. Well, Darcy James Argue, thank you so much.
Thank you, Kurt. It's been a pleasure.
Darcy James Argue's new album, Brooklyn Babylon, is out this month.